we go.
Okay. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for our regularly scheduled commission meeting, which I will call to order now. So we've had a busy week, and I have some special guests I want to start and take a little personal indulgence. A few weeks ago, I talked about the fact that my family was preparing for some visits from Norwegians, who are our ancestors in Norway, that are living on the same farm where my grandpa grew up and lived and moved from to come to America and settle out in Partial, North Dakota. This is a big deal. We've been trying to get them here for a number of years, and they're here. So we're very proud today to have, I don't exactly know what our relation is, second cousins or something to that effect. It's safe with that. Odny and Arnfinn Hermanstead and their son, John Arne Hermanstead. And they're here from Valdres, Norway, which is my grandpa's hometown, and they still live on the farm that he grew up on, and he came here in the at the turn of the century, the previous century, so like the early 1900s. So this dates back many years, and we're just really excited to have them here and to be showing them where he came and where he settled. And they're, so they're here today picking up my car, and they're going to take that out to Partial, North Dakota, and look at the farm site where Grandpa grew up and raised his family. And then my uncle, Orne Hermanstead, he grew up in that farmstead, and so he's going to tell him all kinds of tales about how rough it was, right, Uncle Orne? And he is here from Stoughton, Wisconsin, with his son, Brian, my cousin, and his son-in-law, John. And so they're all here as well. And my oldest sister, Sheila, is here helping be tour guide. We're all kind of passing off. They started in Fargo. My sister there kind of showed them around Fargo. Now my sister, Sheila, lives out in Williston, and she's here because I was preoccupied with the wind farm hearing and this commission meeting today, so I couldn't be tour guide. But tomorrow I'm taking over as tour guide, and we're going to see some Bismarck sites tomorrow. So proud to have you all here and to show you North Dakota. It's been a long time coming, so welcome. So with that done, then I'll move into our more personal business, but I did want to talk a little bit about the wind farm hearing we had yesterday. It was a good hearing in New England.
Thank you guys for coming.
Yes.
thank you.
Can you just tell us kind of where in Norway your place of ancestry is? Is it north, south, east, west?
Give them a mic.
Well, this is quite south in Norway, between Oslo and Bergen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Quite close to the National Park, Jotunheimen.
Yep. And I had the lovely opportunity about 4 years ago, maybe it was five now, maybe it was six, 2010, to go there with my mom and a couple of my siblings, and we visited them, and they were wonderful hosts, and I still think about Odny's wonderful fish that she served, and so it was neat to have been there, and it's even more wonderful to have them here now, so we're proud to have them. And John Arne, you were working for Statoil then. Are you still with Statoil?
No, I'm not working for Statoil. I'm working for Schlumberger.
Okay. So you're in the energy business still, though?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, good. He's an engineer, so... Anyway, it's fun to keep in touch with these distant relatives and keep the family connections going. So thank you very much.
Yay.
Have a wonderful day.
I wonder if they have called for you dig in Norway.
Yeah, you could have. Okay, so moving on to some more business items. Yesterday we were in... We were in New England for a wind farm hearing, and it went well. Everyone was respectful. It was long again, 10 and a half hours, I think, the hearing lasted. And there was lots of public testimony and concern and interest. And so the wind farm issue continues to evolve in North Dakota, and I think all of us are mulling over how we can do this better. And I think that we'll be working on that in the weeks to come. I know I have some ideas that I want to run by legal and run by my colleagues at a future work session. So, but one thing that has happened and has evolved that's very exciting when it comes to wind, and I've talked about this a few times at the hearings, but never in a setting like this, and that is that there's a brand new lighting system available for wind generation facilities. It is a system that is, it's called an ADLS, aircraft detection lighting system, and it is a system that is off all the time until there's an aircraft in the area, and then it turns on and lights up the facility so that the aircraft can avoid it. This system will allow the lights, the red blinking lights, to be off a vast majority of the time and only on when needed to help guide aircrafts around the facility. This is a huge step forward for wind development in North Dakota and all over the country, but particularly I'm concerned about North Dakota. This helps us get our night sky back, and this is technology that the NextEra has agreed to use in its two wind farms that they are currently under the permitting process in North Dakota. It's a huge advancement. I'm very excited about it. I've been talking all over the country to different wind people for the last couple of years, trying to see if there isn't something available to deal with this issue, because I think the blinking red lights is one of the most problematic issues when it comes to wind farm impacts. It doesn't get rid of the towers. They're still going to have an impact on the landscape and the view, but at least at night they won't be apparent to people unless there's an aircraft in the area. And so that's a big advancement. We're excited about it. We're going to be requiring it on the next wind farm we permit and all future wind farms, as long as the technology proves to be workable and acceptable in its final stage with the FAA. They have approved this technology. They just haven't, you know, it isn't widely used across the country, so it's still somewhat of an experiment in an experimental stage. And so we'll have to play with that for, you know, the next couple of years. But it's a significant advancement and one that I'm really excited to be on the cutting edge here in North Dakota. So with that, I think that concludes my opening comments. I'll kick it over to Commissioner Christman for any thoughts he has this morning.
You covered the wind farm well, and I'm sure Commissioner Kalk will talk about Mark a little bit, so I'll just not even address that. But I'll say I don't think we've had a regular meeting since a trip I took to speak to the Southern States Energy Board in eastern Tennessee. And really, I hope not a sign of things to come here, because you really see some devastated industry. One coal mining executive talked about having 8,400 employees in May of last year and being at 5,000 now and going down. And it's not just coal. There's a reluctance to invest in gas because people are uncertain about the future of that. If fracking is prohibited or limited significantly, this cheap gas isn't going to be available for a generation source either. And basically, we're left, the only thing you can get investors to look at is intermittent power. And so a big concern, and the job losses that we keep fretting about are not something to fret about out there. They're reality out there. And so it was kind of sad and kind of concerning, but generally a good trip. And we talked about things we're doing here and things we're doing there. And I think it was a useful excursion.
Thank you, Randy, for taking time to do that. It's always good to be sharing our observations and experiences between states. Okay. Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I
do have to file a report with the Game and Fish about the duck that got in the way of the motorcycle, but that happens. But we're safe and sound. Randy queued it up about the MARC conference. Stacy, thank you for getting that media advisory put out. So for my colleagues in the media, and I shouldn't say colleagues, my friends in the media, it's out there. Sunday night we're having a reception at the Heritage Center. It's the one significant event that will happen there, thanks to Commissioner Christman, is we have all 10 commissioners that are living – that are going to be there for a photo. So I don't know, Dave, if you've worked with a couple of them over the years. Maybe a couple, I'm guessing. But that should turn out pretty well, so that'll be a good event. And then Monday morning, the kickoff is at the Bell Mayhos at 9 o'clock. We'll have Undersecretary of Fossil Fuels, Dave Moeller, will be there. two FERC commissioners, Tony Clark, who used to occupy these chairs, and Colette Honorable. She's also a former commissioner out of Arkansas. Travis Cavula, he's a head of NARUC, currently Montana commissioner, is going to be there. And so we don't have, like, a press conference set up, but if any of you want to talk to any of them, let me know. I've already talked to Alyssa and Dave and set up some things for you. If Mike or Nick, you guys want to talk to them, they're certainly available to share their perspectives about what's going on. So I'm excited about the MARC conference. Thank my colleagues for the time they've let staff work in this. As of this morning, Randy, Julie's tour still has more people her tour than both ours combined. Yeah. So I don't know what that's a sign of, but it's just the way it is. Okay.
Creating some logistical challenges, but we'll work
in a good
way.
Yes,
sign of the difficult standards to we're get in on ours.
Yeah. Very much so.
The only thing I would say, a really true substance that I would add, is to Julie's point about the wind. I think we're in what I'd call the second phase of wind development in North Dakota. I came in the commission right in the middle of the first phase, and we had, you know, the Laverne Wind Farm, we had the Ashtabula and Edgely that I was part of a couple of those, and we had much smaller turbines. No one really knew what the impact would be visually and noise, and we didn't fully understand what wind development meant. And so we set up some, I would say, some rough guidelines, some practices that we followed for that first phase. But the last few years, I think we're in the second phase, where we're seeing these turbines that are up to 3 megawatts. The people now see what they like and don't like about them, and I think that, to Julie's point about a reset of wind development, I think is very appropriate. And I don't mean reset like we're going to stop development, but, okay, while a 1,400-foot setback might have been a guideline that was used the first round, these turbines are much bigger. And while we maybe didn't fully define some of the requirements for flicker, for noise, we did some of those, but I think I agree with you wholeheartedly, because I see a third phase of wind development coming when the Clean Power Plan is ever settled out. Depending which way it goes, we could see, I think, if the Clean Power Plan is upheld and the energy needs are still going to be there, I think we could see our wind siting in North Dakota triple easily. From what I pick up with MISO and Southwest Power Pool, you know, depending how it goes, they'll be looking at a lot of wind resources, and North Dakota has such good wind. So I think it's a good idea for us to lean heavily into these guidelines, because these hearings, everybody has rights, but as you pointed out, and I think your closing comments, Julie, that, you know, this person has the right to develop it, this person has a right to some things in there, but how do you find that balance in there? And that really, I think, becomes the crutch of it. So anything we need to do on that, I'm certainly supportive of.
Yeah, as a follow-up, Dale Nieswag from Basin was at our hearing, and he mentioned that in their most recent RFP process looking for new generation, that they need to meet their future demand. They need to develop to meet their future demand. They had 88 proposals submitted. 44 of those were wind development projects in North and South Dakota. So this is not something that's going to be moving, taking a back seat or stopping or, you know, in behind us. We're very much still in an active wind generation development stage, and I think that what we're seeing through our hearing process is there's a lot of differences between counties, which is fine. I'm not sure that the counties are all necessarily thinking proactively ahead what they want those setbacks to be, and this is indication that you need to give the companies well in advance of them coming in. Otherwise, you're going to be behind the curve on a regulatory standpoint. So I think your comments, Commissioner Culk, that we need to be working with the counties more are spot on, and I think that's something that we need to talk about how we're going to do that and get the conversation going again about what we want the framework to be in North Dakota today moving forward, and so I'm looking forward to having some of those conversations. Anything else? All right. Then we have a pretty light, actually, agenda, and I'll get started. I've got three items. I move the commission adopt the
consent.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. We have a number of items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion's approved.
Thank you, Alana. Thank you for catching that, Brian. Okay, first agenda item. I move the commission adopt the order adopting ALJ recommendation to grant request to withdraw consolidation consolidated application and Senex Pipeline LLC, Senex Prosper Terminal Project, Cass County Siting Application, case number PU-15-798.
Second.
On May 11th, the hearing officer in this case filed an ALJ recommendation to grant this request to withdraw the consolidated application for this terminal. What happened is the company was moving forward with the permitting process here. The Township Board of Supervisors didn't provide them the zoning approval they needed for the location that they were trying to site through us, and so they have decided not to pursue that location and need to withdraw this application from our docket at this point.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion's approved.
Thank you, Alana. Agenda item 2, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Plains Pipeline LP 8-inch crude oil pipeline Bison Pipeline project siting application case number PU-15-35.
Second.
On January 16th of 2015, Plains Pipeline filed a consolidated application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for this 10-mile, 8-inch Denver crude oil pipeline known as the Bison Pipeline Project. On June 24th of last year, 2015, the commission held a hearing on this project. The project consists of approximately 10 miles of 8-inch Denver crude oil pipeline located in Montreal County. The project will originate at Whiting Oil and Gas Corporation's Robinson Lake, located approximately 8 miles northeast of Newtown. It's a gas processing facility, and it will terminate at Plains Van Hook Rail Facility, located approximately 5 miles east of Newtown, North Dakota. I'll explain why it's taken so long to get to this process to an order today, but first I'll go through the project a bit. The maximum capacity of the project will be 25,000 barrels per day. The total cost is estimated to be $9 million. And the portion of the project within the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation will be constructed entirely on land owned in fee. There's 7 different state, federal, and local agencies contacted, and their input has been incorporated into this order. In December 2014, the North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office concurred with a no significant sites affected determination. The one issue that sort of dragged this process out was relating to the U.S. Air Force facilities in that area. The U.S. Air Force indicated last year that the project is outside the project crosses some buried cable that they have. This is an exclusion area. And so the company worked with the U.S. Air Force and developed a process whereby through boring through that area through underneath the cable, and there's a certain parameters that they have to meet in doing that, they essentially avoid the exclusion area. And so we've worked through all the details with the U.S. Air Force. The company has... We're comfortable that the company and the Air Force are on the same page and are going to be collaborating on the crossing of that cable. And so that exclusion area has essentially been avoided. And that was the process that had taken some time to get us, you know, and delayed this final approval process by many months. Other related issues on this order, the Plains, there's 2 inhabited rural residences within 500 feet. They've obtained waivers from that, from those residences. They are maintaining the integrity of wetlands by either avoiding or boring through them or using best management practices. They also testified that a supervisory control and data acquisition system will be installed as part of the project, and operations will be continuously monitored by a control center located in Midland, Texas. So with that, I think that covers all the essential pieces of this. This order is ready to go, and I'm pleased to support it and get this one off of our docket and let the get the company free to construct at their will.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's approved.
Thank you, Alana. And my last item, I move the commission deem complete the applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit, and further move the commission issue a notice of filings and public hearing in Hess, North Dakota Export Logistics, LLC, 12-inch crude oil pipeline, Williams County, citing application case number PU-16-189.
Second.
This is a relatively short pipeline. Hess, North Dakota Export Logistics has filed applications for this permit for a 1.1-mile, 12-inch diameter crude oil pipeline and associated facilities that basically connects their Ramberg truck facility to the Energy Transfer Partners Dakota Access Pipeline. It's a 1.1-mile length distance. We will be handling this permit process with an substantive ALJ, and the hearing is set for July 26th at 11 a.m. Central Time at Nessa Consulting Services in Tioga.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just a question. Do we have to say ALJ in this, or am I just missing it somewhere?
I'm not sure that it's required for us to say that it's an
it isn't.
We?
It is not?
It's okay without saying it.
Yeah. Just setting the hearing in. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion's approved.
Thank you, Lana. That concludes my portfolio, so it's all yours, Randy.
Okay. The first and second motions are kind of tied together. It's canceling of a license and then picking it up by someone else. So, RC1, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-210, canceling warehouse license number 50 issued to Overly Cooperative Elevator Company at Overly, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Overly is discontinued.
Second.
We received this request to discontinue business from Overly Cooperative Elevator. The grain warehouse was sold to and will be licensed by North Central Grain Cooperative of Bisbee, North Dakota. Overly Co-op has no outstanding storage obligations. North Central purchased all the grain inventory and assumed all the credit sale contract obligations. And Overly asked that the request to discontinue business be approved effective June 1st of this year.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'm just not surprised that the Overly Cooperative was able to find a buyer for their business. I wonder if the Underly Cooperative would be able to do the same.
You never know.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's approved.
Okay, and then RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-208, granting the request of North Central Grain Cooperative to operate a 417,000 bushel grain warehouse at Overly, North Dakota.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
No Overly trivia for us today?
Well, I can add a little bit. I wasn't going to, but I had some things about Bisbee. But I'll throw in Overly, too. So, but first of all, North Central Grain Cooperative of Bisbee notified us and that all of their grain inventory and that North Central had assumed all the outstanding credit sale contracts in the grain inventory. North Central is quite a substantial outfit. They operate licensed grain warehouses in Bisbee, Perth, Rock Lake, Rowlett, and Rolla, and now with the addition of Overly, we'll have a combined capacity of 5,960,000 bushels. North Central has a $1,345,000 surety bond filed with the commission. A little bit about North Central Grain, and it's a grain and egg supply cooperative located up in that North Central area of the state. They serve members in 7 communities and 3 counties as a full-service cooperative. They ship over 13 million bushels annually through their 110-car shuttle loader in Bisbee, as well as trucking canola to area processors. North Central has 5 agronomy facilities, 6 anhydrous ammonia facilities, 4 bulk seed facilities, and 6 fuel sites, including 2 convenience stores, 2 hardware and farm supply stores, and 1 auto parts hardware and farm supply store. They have revenue in excess of $150 million and 95 employees. They asked us, they notified us that they have not operated as a grain warehouseman at Overly yet and asked that the license be approved effective June 1st. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends the license be issued effective June 1st. You mentioned Overly, and I did read that there's question about, it used to be a place where rail cars were swapped around, and there were crews there, and so it's unknown whether Overly had to do with the overnight stays of rail employees, or if it was named after some pioneer there named Overly but spelled completely different. So that's sort of unknown. But I did have something more on Bisbee. And you might think that I was going to tell you that it's just named after Colonel Andrew Bisbee, who was a Civil War veteran and settled up here in 1885 and served in the North Dakota State Senate.
I did think that
would be enough. But interestingly, and this is more of a reflection on how things can change in our world quickly, more so than something about Bisbee. September 10th of 2001, think about the date, the day before 9/11, Newsweek magazine ran an article on Bisbee, North Dakota, talking about the slow, painful decline in population. That was what a large publication like Newsweek was talking about on 9/10/01. Wow. Kind of stunning.
Now we got all those jobs out there.
And now we have almost 100 employees and hundreds of millions of activity.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion's approved.
In RC3, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for comment and Nexus Communications Incorporated designated eligible carrier cancellation/application, case number PU-16-212.
Second.
On May 31st, Nexus Communications filed an application with the commission requesting relinquishment of its designation as a lifeline-only ETC. Under federal law, prior to permitting an eligible telecommunications carrier to cease providing universal service in an area, the State Commission shall require that all customers will continue to be served. Nexus indicated to us that it has no subscribers in North Dakota, but we're going to issue this anyway, and we will receive written comments in this proceeding until the close of business on July 8th.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Say it.
Oh. No. Opposed? Motion's approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Randy. Sorry about that. I wanted to just back up to RC2 and check the license was to be issued effective June 1st.
Correct.
Do we do that? Retroactive?
Yeah.
Oh, you did,
I did a temporary.
Okay.
One in this case to get us through today.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Just wasn't sure about that. Okay. Brian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have 2 items today, but before I go off on those, we were talking about wind earlier today, but I would also highlight some of the coal stuff going on in North Dakota. With Undersecretary Moeller coming out, he's going to go spend significant time with GRE and look at their dry finding technique that was, you know, started by GRE. Department of Energy had a role, and that's now been in production for almost 6 years, and they've, you know, done great things with their efficiency long before the Clean Power Plan. And now the alum cycle, it's the hottest thing going in coal development, and that's our own BNI Coal in North America. So he's going to come out and spend a lot of time with those two companies talking about the alum cycle. And this last session, I think, as both of you know, there was some money put in there to continue development on the alum cycle, but now trying to get some commitment out of DOE. And others to try to build a pilot project for this, maybe a new 50-megawatt coal plant or something like that, which could scale itself up. So while wind development keeps going through different phases, we haven't forgot about coal, and it is significant to get one of the undersecretaries up here. And we have, you know, two U.S. senators and a congressman that are both very supportive of coal, and this is probably the last place in the country that's actively doing this kind of work with coal. So it's good to see we're not banning the coal right now. We're doing everything. So that's good. So, all righty then. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the consent order and Public Service Commission Adelman Concrete and Excavating, Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU15748.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In November of last year, we received a complaint from Lisa Kahlberg from Xcel Energy alleging a violation by Adelman Concrete and Excavating of North Dakota Century Code. Adelman is a... I can't even talk today. Too long of hearing last night.
I feel the same.
Adelman is a concrete excavating company operating in North Dakota. And, of course, we all know who Xcel Energy is. Adelman is based out of Fargo. The long and short of the complaint is that on July 7th at 3:45, staff concluded that Adelman personnel provided an excavation notice to the North Dakota One Call system for work to begin July 9th at 4 p.m., go on down the road a little bit here, that on July 9th at 9:48 p.m., Adelman started doing digging, so before their ticket was valid. And the while performing parking lot construction at the intersection of University Drive and Administrative Avenue in Fargo, North Dakota, on the campus of North Dakota State University, although that did not bias my decision on this, the long and short of it, they were digging 6 hours before their ticket was valid. The company hit a 2-inch natural gas main line, which damaged with the approximate damages of $1,400. So luckily no one was injured. There certainly was damage. Based on the investigation, staff concluded there was no agreement. It was not being made in time of emergency, and Adelman violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to provide an excavation notice. Now, while it is, you know, quote-unquote, only 6 hours, it wasn't a valid ticket. So it's just the law is the law, and the company agreed to sign a consent order on this and pay a fine of $1,600 payable to North Dakota Public Service Commission. I do think the ongoing discussion about one call is good, and there's going to be some refinements made about when ticket call length start and stop, so that's good. But this one, they didn't have a valid ticket, and I think that staff did the right thing, and I appreciate all parties getting resolution on this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Our order is clear and correct. I think you might have misspoken and said 9:48 p.m. on that day when they started excavation, which would be more than 48 hours.
You are correct.
But it says 9:48 a.m., and that's less than 48.
Thank you,
sir. Just for people who are listening.
Just as a question here, some of the changes that are being proposed would make the start time for the 48 hours, is it midnight of that day, or is it of the day, so it wouldn't be in the middle of the afternoon, so you wouldn't be going from 3:45 to 3:45 2 days later? It would be,
my understanding is the tickets will all start at midnight the day they're put in, and
okay,
so it'll be 48 hours from then. But I see Mark and Ryan both here. Did I just say that right? Yeah, so that's one
of the things. So if that passes, that would maybe clarify this, or it might make it worse, because it's actually then they wouldn't have been able to start digging until the next day, July 10th.
That's the way, depending when the ticket was called in, but yes. But it'd be clear midnight is your time that you wait. Basically, you can start the next morning, so it'd
right.
be easier to understand than trying to figure out, is my ticket valid at 2:30 or is it valid at all tickets are become valid, if you will, at midnight.
Yeah, and you can see how the communication would break down if they thought, well, July 7th was when it was called in, and July 9th they start digging, and it's for, you know,
yep.
By the time it gets down to the guys on the ground, it might easily be confusing. So this would clarify it by just really it wouldn't start ticking until July 8th, and then the effective date would be July 10th. So that is a change that this might be a good case study to illustrate in the legislature how that might work.
And I agree with all that and support the legislation, but I also, on the other side of the coin, the excavator showed up at the place to do the work, and there was no flags there, and they just started digging. So that's not part of this discussion, but that's the reality of probably what they saw on the ground. So it's just, there's so many things going on out there. But I do think this is the right thing, and the staff does a nice job working with the companies, and we're continuing to move forward on this.
Is there any further discussion?
I'll just throw it out since we have the right audience here that will be working on that legislation, probably a pro and a con just to weigh in as you prepare for it. You know, on the one hand, it kind of adds a third day. You come out, you have a problem. When you start work in the morning, you call it in. Now, instead of 2 days later, sometime that morning, you can start fixing it. Now you've just added a third day. To me, that's kind of a negative of it. The one thing in proceeding with that plan, make sure and do 1201 or something like that, because, you know, you'll lead to confusion with, was 12 o'clock beginning of that day or the beginning of the next one. And so you got to really be cautious with those midnight times.
Well, and I'll push back the other way. I agree with that. But we've heard from your background, the co-ops out there, telephones that are doing 300, 400 locates a day, that they need that 48 hours. Yeah. So it's that constant give and take back and forth that, yes, it does slow things down, but do it correctly if you know what you're doing, because we have so many people trying to keep up with locates, we don't want them rushing either. Yeah. But hence the friction that we live with.
I think the key is process it through, see what's the best policy, but don't go with 12 o'clock.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
12:01 or something like 1 a.m. or something.
Right.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's approved.
All right, thank you, Lana. Last but not least, item BK2. I move the commission adopt a consent order in Public Service Commission Stephen Keller, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU16182.
Second.
Before I go through my litany here, I will say this is the most unique case that I've seen on one call, and I appreciate Victor's work with the company for making sure, and the individual, to making sure we dealt with what was filed with us, but we dealt with it, I think, in a manner that made pretty good sense. So Vic isn't even in here, is he? All right. On May of this year, the commission received a one-call complaint from Bob Shell at Mid-Continent alleging a violation by Schweitzer & Sons Excavating that they had violated North Dakota one-call. Public Service Commission staff sent a copy of this to the complaint to Schweitzer. Schweitzer filed a response asserting that he'd never done any work in that city where the complaint was alleged. He further stated he'd not borrowed any of the trailers and that he had borrowed one of his construction trailers and tools to his nephew on the date noted in the complaint. So right then you're just like, So as we sort through this, Stephen Keller is the North Dakota homeowner with the mailing address where the incident took place. Mid-Continent, of course, is the company. As our crack staff dug through this, they found out that Stephen did begin an excavation as defined in North Dakota Century Code while installing a concrete pad. He did, in fact, damage a Mid-Continent communication cable. Approximate damages, $350. It was not being made of time of emergency, and he did violate North Dakota one-call law. You know, the background here is when Vic was researching all of this, the homeowner called Vic and said, listen, we did it. And so, yes, they did violate the law. They were very honest and upfront about what happened. I think Mid-Continent, when they filed the complaint, they thought they were talking about an excavator, and they may have looked at it differently with the homeowner. But the long and short of it was that we processed through this, and this consent order basically fines the homeowner $1,000, but it is suspended as long as they do not violate North Dakota Century Code for 5 years. And I think this is certainly reasonable. The reason it's $500 or $1,000, not $500, is there the ticket and there was damage. So the staff is following through with the protocol. So I do think that this is very reasonable dealing with how this all played out, but it just shows, I think, that the complexity in the real world out there, sometimes things happen. So thank everyone in this case, because it really, I think, worked out okay.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I went through this twice, and I don't know if I'm missing it, but oftentimes in these violation cases, we highlight, you know, how many people were out of power or something like that. Was this just the line that went into Stephen's house, or did this put other people out of internet and TV service?
I will have telephone to double check with Victor on that, because I don't know the answer to that question, Randy. It was not highlighted in any of the stuff that I read.
And I don't know it's essential either, but it's just often mentioned. So. Okay, never mind.
Any further discussion?
The one thing, as I was going through this, is it is a reminder that the on-call laws do apply to homeowners as well.
Absolutely.
And so homeowners need to be calling and getting their facilities located before they dig also.
Even when they're borrowing their brother-in-law's equipment.
Yes, especially when they're borrowing their brother-in-law, who's a contractor's equipment.
Vic, did you have an answer for Commissioner Chrisman about?
It was just to his home.
All right, just to his home.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's approved.
That concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, that concludes our regular agenda. We have Mark coming up next week. We have a formal, that's the ALJ formal hearing. Mark is the big thing on the agenda, and our formal hearings are a little bit slower for the rest of June and July, so it looks like we've got a little bit of a breather to take up some policy issues and get ready for the session and do our budget and take care of all those items of business. So unless Lawrence has more projects he's going to be sending our way. All right, so with that, we'll open up for any questions.
To clarify a little bit, Commissioner Kalk,
sure.
When you have Secretary Moeller here,
yes,
will you be pushing the alum cycle, or will people be trying to convince him to get behind the alum cycle?
Absolutely, Dave. When I had the fortune to go with him to China last year as part of a Department of Energy tour, and so we got to be pretty good friends in that two-week period, and quite honestly, I started pushing the alum cycle to him then. And he went back and met with his staff. There's actually been some presentations he's received out in D.C. on it. So he's looking forward to come out and look at this. And this is perhaps one of the, his words, one of the best opportunities they see for Department of Energy to get behind something with the next generation of coal. So, yes, we will be pushing it, but he's also coming out here. This is part of his agenda.
Well, with all the layoffs in the coal industry, not so much in North Dakota, it was surprising to hear that there isn't much going on in terms of R&D in other states.
Well, and that's when I meet with the other members of the Clean Coal Committee, the people have to put up capital, and no one is really doing that. I mean, you see Peabody Coals has challenges, and, you know, the utilities, if you will, they're switching to gas and wind, and they're not choosing to spend their money on R&D. And so that's one of the frustrations that I've met with many coal companies around the country and say, why aren't you investing in R&D yourself? It's your resources. But, Dave, we're not seeing any projects. Southern Company is the exception. They've, of course, done the Kemper plant, and they've bet the farm, if you will, on that generation of technology. And I think that will work out. But with the exception of what Southern is doing in North Dakota, I'm unaware of anything going on.
I would just want to add to that. You know, there was a commitment to push coal companies to bankruptcy 8 years ago, and in many cases that's been successful around the country. And so you go to those coal companies and expect them to invest money into R&D when they're under bankruptcy protection is a pretty tough stretch for them to do it. So I think that's a lot of why you're not seeing it in more places.
Maybe even pile on a little bit more. We all know commissioners from around the country, but I know the Wyoming commissioners very well. And I've talked to them about this. What is going on in Wyoming? And, you know, some of the Wyoming coal companies are making plans to send their coal overseas. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's bizarre. And so when you've got companies making logistics plans to export coal to China instead of burning it at home, that doesn't make any sense. And that was part of when Secretary Moeller and I went to China about, you know, the new technologies that are being developed here. They can be used in other countries, obviously. And so maybe even if they're not able to be used in the U.S., I know GRE has been to Australia, they've been to China. So these technologies are going to be used not only in the U.S., but all over the world. And the reality is maybe the U.S. is cutting back on coal, but it will be a staple of energy generation for forever. So I think these technologies will pencil out if we can get them from concept to pilot to development.
The additional factor that's exacerbated things for coal is low-priced gas. And we're hearing that in the discussions with utilities, that they're running their gas peakers much more than they expected because gas is so cheap. and it's cheaper in some cases than running Leland Olds, for example, or so they're backing off on some of that, running gas instead to supplement wind. And so you're just seeing some of those challenges. So that is an additional hurdle for coal. But coal will be the only resource available if they outlaw fracking or ban fracking, which has been one of the platforms of the leading Democrat candidate for president. So both of them, I believe. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot. It's a lot for the utilities to try to predict and manage in when they look on 30-year timeframes and they can't even get certainty a year from now. It's a pretty tough area to plan in and prepare for. So stay tuned. Any other questions?
Yes. Just to clarify something, Commissioner Crispin, did you, because it was license number 50 on Overly Cooperative Elevator, does that mean that they've been in business for a long time?
I presume it does. It must have been one of the original licensees, but I'd look to Sue for... Oh, and before that, you just got a new number every year, right?
Okay, gotcha.
So, but I do think they were in existence for a long time.
Okay. Well, would you say that North Central Grain Cooperative was very overly optimistic?
I think they're accurately optimistic. About
you have to do a story about this so you can say a pun on the air.
Absolutely.
Any other questions?
Yeah, what was the timetable on that... Plains Pipeline, I think you were saying from earlier?
For construction?
Yeah.
No, I would defer to the company, and I believe that they're here to talk if the construction is going to start or if there's a hold, if they're in a holding pattern on that project. Do we know?
I think they plan on starting pretty soon, but I don't know a date.
Okay.
Are the backhoes out there now at noon?
No.
And it's Julie.
We've got a call first.
Julie, do we have a construction inspection and meetings already scheduled for that? So, okay, so that is an indicator that they'll probably start constructing this summer. And it's not real long, so I wouldn't think it would take more than one construction season.
So basically just likely this summer.
This summer, and yep.
You guys touched on the budget. I guess where are you guys kind of at in terms of the, you know, budgeting process? And I guess also with, you know, the pilot program last session, do you guys see that as being any serious issue with that going into next session as part of the budgeting process?
Well, I'll take the second question first. The pilot program for rail was funded by special funds, so that isn't a general fund savings. So I don't anticipate that being an issue, at least from our budget process. In terms of our budget process, the three of us are meeting pretty consistently, and we don't have any announcements or details yet, but we will be meeting we will be asking for an extension and hopefully completing all of our budget decisions by mid-August. Anything else, Alyssa? All right. Okay, so then we have a few things to sign. We will adjourn for 10 minutes and be back at about 5 after.
Sure.
Okay.